I don't remember the first time that I realized that we're all struggling with how to let go of things, but I've noticed it over the course of my career that this tends to be a place where we all get stuck in life. When I was a chaplain, I worked at a hospital, and in that hospital setting, I was the second shift chaplain. I was kind of the backup chaplain for all of the student chaplains we had. I was one step down from the full-time chaplains. I was actually in my training at that point. But that meant that I got to deal with people second shift as people were going home. Families had gone home for dinner and the staff had thinned out. And so whenever somebody was in distress, I'm the one that got called in to help calm them down and help them think about where they were while they were stuck in the hospital thinking. When you're in the hospital, when you're sick, when you're not feeling well, or when you're facing something like a terminal illness or a chronic illness, that brings up some pretty big questions in life. So in those conversations, I would hear from people about things that had happened to them, places they couldn't let go of. Sometimes it's where they couldn't forgive themselves. Sometimes it was where they couldn't forgive somebody else. But it struck me on how often people were stuck, not being able to move forward, held captive by something in the past, somebody, what somebody said, what somebody did, what the world did to them in their estimation, what other people did to them, what God did to them in their own estimation, what they did to other people or didn't do. They found themselves stuck, unable to move forward. And in that process, I realized that that's a fundamental issue that we struggle with in life. How do we let go of things we've done that we have maybe even made amends for, but just can't let it go? Or more importantly, when somebody's done something to us and we can't let it go, we just keep on churning on that and allowing that event to hold us captive, sometimes for our entire life. That was as a chaplain. Then as I was a therapist, that was kind of the menu of the day for many people. People would come in and struggle with things that had happened to them, sometimes very horrible things that had happened to them in their life, and they couldn't find a way through it. A lot of times it was something that happened in their childhood. Sometimes it was something that happened to them later on in life that they just could not get beyond. Sometimes it was a tragedy that wasn't necessarily that somebody did, but life did to them. And they were shut down by it. And it began to be the roots of their depression and their anxiety and their malaise in life, their frustration with things. Sometimes it led to broken relationships and the heartache of broken relationships and the struggles with that. And as I started working with couples, I began to notice how the accumulated hurts in life, big and small, had chipped away and chipped away and chipped away at their connection with each other to the point that it began to crumble. And many times as they sat in front of me, they would tell me the stories of heartache and pain, the stories of anger and resentment that were there because they had not been able to move beyond something that had happened. It didn't necessarily have to be huge. Sometimes it was the little slights. You know, somebody didn't get an anniversary gift or a birthday gift or didn't even acknowledge those days or didn't carry their, what one person would estimate is the fair share of, you know, carrying the family financially or taking care of the kids or taking care of the house. Or maybe it was a relationship that was inappropriate or felt inappropriate, or maybe it was a slight of disconnection that had grown into something that began to eat away to the point that somebody didn't see how to move forward in the relationship. In other words, what I realized is many times marital therapy was a matter of cleaning out the debris, of digging down through the stuff, to use a better word, to get to the place where they had a foundation to build from. And a lot of that was about forgiving. A lot of that was about figuring out how to let go of things that had happened in the past. We have so many issues with that word forgive that sometimes it was easy for people to think about the process of letting go. But as you and I are here talking, I want you to focus on that word forgive. I'm going to tell you why in just a minute. When I switched over to coaching, coaching was much more about building forward. And what I realized is I was trying to help people move forward, and yet it was as if they were shackled to a weighted ball behind them, that they were slowly pulling forward. And you know what that weighted ball was? The same things that kept them stuck when I was doing therapy. The resentments and hurts. The places they felt slighted, and the places where they felt like somebody had done them wrong, or the world had done them wrong, or God had done them wrong, and they weren't able to move forward. Sometimes they had allowed those events to shape how they viewed themselves, to believe that they weren't capable of something because somebody had left that message with them. Now, I can tell you that that process is true for 100% of humans. We humans store our hurts unless we work to clear them out. I know that in my own life, having looked back and gone, okay, I've got to figure out how to let that go. I've got to let go of some events in my past. And I struggle with that. I struggle with the struggles my brother and I had when I was a child, and how I felt like I needed to hold on to keep myself safe, and I realized I had to let go of that. I had to forgive people who at one point tried to kill me on a couple of occasions, and figure out how to not be held hostage or fearful of that. But that also happens on small things. You know, when somebody doesn't say what we want them to say, or they say something we don't want to hear, or they do something to us, or they don't do something to us, and we hold on to that, and we get stuck, and we harbor that, and it shapes our lives. So the process of forgiving is really the task of letting go. So just for a moment, let's think about that. Let's get a very clear understanding of what we're talking about in this process. And I'll tell you a little, one of the things I like to do is kind of look at where did a word come from? Because sometimes that tells us a little bit about what it means at a deeper level. Forgive comes from Latin, perdonare. Perdonare means to forgive completely without reservation. You may hear another word in there. It sounds a little like pardon. And when we pardon someone, we release them from whatever offense it was that they were convicted of. It didn't mean they didn't do it. It means that we release them from that. We hear that now a lot in politics of who's being pardoned, who's being let off the hook for that, right? And so forgiveness has been often seen as to let go of completely, right? To pardon completely. And there's a little bit of this that can trap us, because then if somebody's pardoned, it doesn't mean they didn't do it. It just means they're not paying the price anymore. And sometimes we get that stuck in our head of, wait, why don't they have to pay the price? There's an Aramaic word, and Aramaic is closely related to Hebrew. But the Aramaic word shabag means to untie. Shabag. It means to untie. And I like that word because it means that we have a choice of untying ourselves. That was the word used to talk about forgiving as shabag, to untie ourselves from an event, from an injury, from an insult that's happened to us. We get to let that go, untie ourselves from that. It doesn't mean it didn't happen. It doesn't mean that the other person is kind of free to do what they want to do, because we never had control of that anyway. It unties us from that. And I think that that's a very important kind of way of thinking about that. You know, if you think about your life as a string, and that event as the knot in it, to be able to untie and let it go. So those words sometimes hold us back. And there are some reasons that we get held back that are based in our false beliefs about forgiveness, and also about kind of how culture goes around talking about forgiveness. And I want to talk about a big stuck point that I see. And that is the sense of having to forgive. We have to forgive. You might have had a very similar kind of memory as me, but I remember my older brother and I would get into a skirmish, and my father, completely frustrated with us, would hold us by the scruff of our necks and make us apologize, even though there was no apology in our hearts, and make us forgive, even though there was no forgiveness in our hearts. And I remember being faced with my brother and having to go, I'm sorry, right? And he was having to say, I'm sorry. And I would have to go, I forgive you. And he would have to say, I forgive you. I wasn't sorry, and I wasn't forgiving. He wasn't sorry, and he wasn't forgiving. And yet, we were made to do that. So many of us were raised in a culture, right, in a family where somebody, a parent, made us forgive another spouse or another child or maybe somebody else in the family. They made us do that. And because of that, we feel obligation behind forgiveness. We have to do that. And that's been multiplied in churches and in synagogues and in other religious places where somehow it's been twisted to you have to forgive. And yet, I think behind that misses the opportunity to forgive. So let's think about the obligation and shift it to opportunity. From I have to forgive to I get to forgive. And that'll make more sense as we move through this on why that's so important. If you remember, there is, if you're from a Christian background or you have some knowledge of Christian scripture, there is the question of the person coming to Jesus saying, how many times should we forgive somebody? Notice that word. How many times should we forgive somebody? How many times do I have to forgive them? Seven times? Do I have to do it that many times? And Jesus gives a math formula that has nothing to do with math. But he says 7 times 70. That's how many times you forgive. In other words, countlessly. That's what we get to do. It's an option for us to let go of that and move forward. It's an option for us to always embrace time after time after time, no matter how many times we have to. Why? So we are not tied to that hurt. We are not tied to that injury or that insult. We're not tied to that event or that person. We get to be free of those. So why don't we do it? Well, it's because we also have some myths behind that. And these myths, maybe you can think through this a little bit by something that has happened every time I've taught a course on forgiving, which is a number of times. I'll go up to the board and I'll explain to them that, you know, we have this opportunity to forgive. And then I'll ask a question. So what are some things that we can't forgive, that are the unforgivables of life? And typically they are pretty quick to tell me all of the unforgivables of life. They'll tell me about, you know, if a child is hurt or an atrocity is done or some horrible crime is committed, then forgiveness should not be done, right? So we end up with this list, and I'll then go through and say, okay, now let's remember that forgiving is an opportunity for us to untie ourselves from that. Now, which of these are unforgivable? And they still have the same vote. Why? Because we have these myths that hold us back. The first myth is somehow that forgiveness is for the offender. Forgiveness is never for the person who did that. It is always primarily for the person who is forgiving. Let's say that somebody hurt you and they go on their merry way and you refuse to forgive them because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to do it for them, but they're nowhere around you. They have nothing to do with you. And yet you wouldn't forgive them. How does it affect them, right? How does it change anything for them? Let's go a step further. Let's say that somebody does know that you're holding it against them and you decide to forgive them and you never tell them. You can forgive them and never even tell them you've done that. How would that possibly benefit for them? How is it for them? In reality, forgiving is always for the person who's forgiving, primarily. Now, the reason I say primarily is it's possible that once you forgive, there is a shift that can happen in the relationship. It's possible. But we need to understand the context of some other myths that are keeping us stuck. Another myth is that somehow forgiving lets the person off the hook. Somehow, if we forgive, we will release somebody from something. Those are separate issues. They are in no way necessarily connected. Somebody can do something, you forgive them, and they still be held accountable for that. Let me say that again. Somebody can do something, you can forgive them, and they can still be held accountable for that event. When I was a child, Pope John Paul II was shot. Led to the Popemobile and a lot of other things, but he was shot. And after he recovered, he went to the prison cell of the person who had shot him. And he forgave him. He offered him forgiveness. He said, I forgive you. And now the important part is the Pope left that cell and left his assailant in that cell. He didn't release him. He had forgiven him, but there was something that still had to be done. There was a process that had to be done. So when that is the case for that level, it can be the case for us in smaller levels. I can forgive somebody, but that doesn't let them off the hook. I mentioned earlier that in my early adulthood, young adulthood, I had a couple of events where somebody tried to kill me. And those people are in jail. As far as I know, they are still in jail. And I have let go of that, released that, and forgiven it. But that had nothing to do with the legal process. The process of retribution can still happen even if we decide that we're not going to be trapped by it. So it's not about letting the person off the hook. It's allowing ourselves to be released from it. It's allowing ourselves to be untied from the hurt and the pain of that, to find a way forward in our own lives so that we're not trapped by something that happened to us. The third myth is that somehow we've got to forgive and forget. And this is probably one of the most pernicious myths that float around because we hear it said so many times. It kind of rolls off our lips. Maybe it's the alliteration, forgive and forget. Can you just forgive and forget? So one of the things that is very clear to me is if there's something that you can forget, it doesn't need to be forgiven. It's a very trite phrase that people throw out, forgive and forget, forgive and forget, usually because they don't want a painful event recalled. You can forgive something or someone, an event, something that happened to you, and not forget it. It'll still be there. Sometimes people want to make sure that they're not somehow going to have to let go of their memories of what happened, but sometimes we have to change how we're connected to those memories of what happened. Sometimes how we understand those events can change. Our interpretation can change. It's not that the events didn't happen or that we misunderstood the hurt that was caused by it or that we somehow have to forget it as much as we transform our relationship to that. The problem with this is that many times we begin to form our identity around something. And this is where I realize it's a kind of a tender area for people. I find this particularly true when somebody has undergone some horrendous event and they begin to define themselves by it. And that definition of themselves, their self-identity begins to be so wrapped up in that trauma that forgiving that trauma puts their identity at risk. So I recognize that one of the things I'm saying right now can be a very painful thing for people. We do bound ourselves sometimes to events as our way of understanding ourselves. And in the process, we anchor ourselves to a pain, a hurt, a scar, some event. And we want to be able to point at it and say, this is who I am, instead of this is what happened to me. So many times in therapy, one of the things I was trying to help people distinguish was the difference between being an identity and an event. the identity and the event are not the same thing. So understand that there are possibilities here that can keep us stuck if we're not careful. Let me just say that one more time. What happens to us is not who we are. An event can happen to us and it not be our identity. Part of forgiving is saying, I am no longer held hostage and identified and formed by that event. Even if it still happened to me and I know it happened to me and I can recall what happened to me, I relate to it in a different way. Some years ago, when I was still in private practice, I had a client who came to me, and now it's probably been 20 years ago. And she started telling me about this horrific divorce that had happened to her. At that point, she had two young kids when it happened to her, and she lost everything. And she came from it was an affluent person that she married, and they had a very affluent lifestyle. And one day he came home and said, I'm divorcing you. I'm in love with this other person. Get out of my house. He threw her in the street, gave her nothing. The courts gave her nothing. Repeatedly, she was left out. And in the process, identified herself as victim. And as she told it to me, I thought the process must still be ongoing, that there must still be some unresolved pieces of this that must be a fairly recent event. So I finally said, so when did this happen? Now, this was 20 years ago, and it happened 20 years before. I worked with this person week after week after week after week after year. And at no point was she able to let go of that because it defined her. And she didn't want to be defined in a different way than that. She wanted him to be held accountable for what he had done. And the process, the legal process, and the attorneys and the judges who all were involved, to be held accountable for that. They weren't. Long ago, he had gone on and run his life, you know, the way he wanted to. He got married and had kids. And long ago, those attorneys had continued on their process, and the judge continued on, and all the appeals had gone away, and she was no longer remembered, but she remembered it. And she defined herself by that. When I left that position, the last conversation I had, it was as if the divorce was still going on. So I was in that position for 18 years, and I saw her most of those 18 years. Nearly 38 years later, I was still unable to pry that from her. She didn't want to give up her identity. What a waste. It's not like she's going to be able to go back and relive that life and recapture all those years where she seethed in anger and hurt. Nothing had changed except for she had been frozen to that forever. For everybody else involved, everything had changed. Life had gone on. So not only had she lost her marriage, but she lost her adult life to that event because she was not able to forgive. I've talked with survivors of different events in life, and because they were not able to get to the point of forgiving, they gave up life that could have been lived. So part of what we're doing in this process of forgiving is making sure that we are not held hostage to events that are in our past, to people that are in our past that don't deserve to hold us hostage. In some ways, it's reclaiming what should be yours anyway. Not held hostage by it, but reclaiming who you are and what you deserve in life. And I want you to think about that, of how many things happen to us that we stay locked in and we give up what we could have because of what's happened that we can't change and we can't move beyond. Which brings us to some of the reasons that we struggle so much. So if forgiveness is this thing that's so important and it's an opportunity for us, and it's not about the offender, it's for ourselves, and it doesn't let them off the hook, and we don't have to worry about forgetting something, why don't we? Well, one of the big reasons is because we have this little piece of our brain that keeps us alive that is our survival wiring. You are safe when you notice every threat that could be in your way. You're far more safe by that than if you're oblivious to threats around you. And so there's a part of your brain that's constantly recording what's going on around you and saying, was that a threat? Is that a threat? Was that a threat? Is that a threat? If something hurts you, it's a threat. If it comes back in the future, you want to identify it and say, I'm going to stay away from that. And because of that, we hold on to our emotions. And because of those emotions locking in on those events, we keep thinking about it, and that keeps us from processing through and letting it go. Our survival wiring is better tuned at a higher frequency. In other words, that we are at a hairpin trigger of something being unsafe than too slow to respond to something that's truly unsafe. We would rather filter out safe things on the possibility that they're unsafe than to allow in unsafe things on the possibility that they're safe. So because of that, we are constantly looking for the process of how we move forward. When we are looking for what we need to be safe about, that survival wiring, that is not the same as our thrival wiring, the stuff that helps us thrive in life. So we get trapped by that survival wiring that tells us, look for the threats, look for the threats. Not assume it's safe, but look for the threats. And so part of what we do is we confuse that with, I've got to hold on to this. We don't see that we can both learn some lessons, which is one of the parts we'll talk about as we get actually into the forgive process. We can learn lessons and remember some of the things that how we need to react without refusing to let go of something. So this is a place where the wiring feels like we have to hold on to something when in reality we don't. The survival wiring is there, but we get to override it with our thrival wiring when we understand the difference that I could actually understand a risk factor and not be held hostage to it. I could actually understand how something happened and what I need to do to protect myself and not be seeing myself as unable to let go of that, unable to forgive it. I can choose the data that I'm going to pull from that event as my survival piece and still step into thriving. And by the way, thriving requires us to work on forgiveness if we want to truly thrive. And we don't have to forgive. I said at the beginning, we get to forgive. We don't have to forgive. But if we really want to step into thriving, that's going to be a part of the game. If we want to step into better relationships, that's going to be part of the game. When we refuse to forgive, we get stuck. And stuck is not doing anything to actually let us thrive. It might keep us surviving. Remember, that part of your brain that's about how you survive is going, okay, if something was safe, let's keep doing it. For instance, sitting on the couch, pretty safe. So far, nothing bad has happened to you on the couch sitting there. So when you're going, hey, should I do something or should I sit on the couch? That's the part of the brain that's sabotaging you and going to sit on the couch. Should I engage with somebody or should I avoid them? Because, you know, in the past, maybe something's hurt you. The survival part says, hey, you're always safe not engaging. That's not really true, but that's what it's saying to you because last time you engaged with somebody, you know, that was, or didn't engage with somebody, you stayed safe. You know, if I see someone across the room, I'm like, ooh, I really like to talk to that person, but I'm a little nervous about doing that. And I didn't go over there. I survived. That part of my brain goes, see, you survived. Let's not do that in the future because that's how we survive, by not going over there. So remember that's a tripwire in our brain of going, hey, you survive by doing nothing. Hey, you survive by holding on to the hurt. Hey, you survive by not forgiving. Hey, you survived by avoiding too much, which can keep you from thriving. Okay, there is another piece in our belief system that also keeps us trapped, and that is our belief in fair. In other words, life should be fair. We see ourselves as exceptions, that something is wrong when life isn't fair. So if life is fair, then I should be treated fairly. Now, you got to ask the question, compared to what? And so I've talked about this in a couple of other places. I'm not going to go into detail about why life is unfair as much as to tell you life is not fair. That's not the equation. In fact, if you're able to be on this call, life's not fair, but man, you're winning by your capacity of even being on this, the listening to this. But what that means for us is that if something bad happens, you know, we hit a bump, our immediate brain goes to, well, that's not fair. Someone mistreats us. Well, that's not fair. We're in an accident. Well, that's not fair. You know, something bad befalls us. That's not fair. The company closes. That's not fair. Somebody steals from us. That's not fair. And because we're waiting for fair, we often want to not let go of that. You know, it's not fair that something happened to me. As long as we're playing out the tape of things should be fair, when things are not fair, we register that as something's wrong, right? And we need to hold on to that. The fact is that life is not fair. The fact is things are going to happen to you and to me. The fact is people are going to be hurtful. People are going to take advantage of us. That's life. We can learn from that. We can do what we can to prevent it. But if we're waiting for fair to click back in and we see ourselves as having lost the fair question, that's going to be a problem. So we're trying to find some ways of stepping into fairness. Your belief in fair can keep you from stepping forward in life. So if you have ever heard yourself say, this isn't fair, how my spouse is treating me isn't fair, how life is treating me isn't fair, how my family is treating me isn't fair, I'm not saying that you should, you know, give up and say, just let life roll over me. I'm saying that in terms of forgiving, playing out the fair tape isn't going to get you very far. If you say, I'm not fairly treated in my household, okay, let's make some changes, but don't let that keep you from letting go of the hurts in the past. It's just a false belief. Life is not fair. It's not going to be fair. There's no way you can get to fair, so we got to give up on fair. Okay, there's one other piece that often holds people back. It's the reality of the struggle is that we don't have a process. We don't know how to do this. If you're like most people, at no point in your life did you arrive at a class called How to Forgive. In fact, if you were involved in some religious program, you might have heard you need to forgive. We have to forgive. We're called to forgive, but very little instruction on how to do it. Probably along the way somewhere, you've heard some great quote about forgiving. And yet, no process to do that. Sometimes we think that it's enough to just say, okay, I forgive you. And in just a minute, you're going to discover why that's the beginning of the process, not the process. And the reason it trips people up is because many times you say, okay, I forgive you. And then you realize that nothing has changed in you, and certainly nothing has changed in the relationship. And so part of our task is to work on that process. But until you have a process, even if somebody says you should forgive, and even if you say, you're right, I need to forgive, and even if you say, I want to forgive, you don't know how to forgive. The other day, we got a new electronic thing. It was a new TV. And, you know, my wife wanted to change channels. And she was like playing with that. She said, I don't know how to do it with this. Therefore, she was not able to get to where she wanted to. So we play with a little, and I said, oh, wait, we need to change the batteries. So once we change the batteries, then we have the mechanism to do it, but there's still a process to it. And that is true with this process of forgiving. There are step-by-step instructions. And if you've ever put together something with no instructions, and at the end of it, it looked nothing like the picture, and you had spare parts, and you had no idea what to do with that, that's kind of what happens when we don't know the process to forgive. So now let's do something. Let's move into the process. Today, I'm only going to cover step one. In the next training, we'll cover steps two and three. And then the final training, we'll cover steps four, five, and six. So Step one. And when I say it, I don't want you to think, oh, that's easy, because this is the pivotal point. Step one is to decide to forgive. That's a bigger piece than most people think it is. This is where you really, truly decide that you're moving beyond this, that you're not going to be held captive by this, that you're not going to be stuck in this, that you are going to find your way forward. It's a decision that comes because what you're doing now is not working to A, get you away from the hurt and the pain, B, change the direction of your life, and C, help you figure out what to do about the relationship. So I want you to remember that when you decide to forgive, it doesn't mean you're deciding to reunite with whoever hurt you. It's not deciding that you'll have nothing to do with if, you know, there's some consequence to that. It's not deciding that you're throwing this behind you and forgetting about it. It's a decision to forgive what's happened so that you can move forward. It's basically untying yourself from that event, that insult, that hurt, that pain. And that's why it's such an important step. I don't want you to take it lightly. I want you to fully decide that you're going to do it. Here's why. It's not an easy process. There are some pieces that are confrontations to ourselves, to what we believe about ourselves, to what we believe about life. And we have to be willing to face those and move through them and rewrite what's happened in our lives in order to get through the process. And if you haven't truly decided to do that, it's not going to work. Think about how many times in life you make what you think is a decision and you don't follow through. I'm going to start exercising. Maybe a day or two you do that, and then it falls off the map. Or I'm going to eat better, and then a day or two later, you find yourself eating the same junk food as before. All of those things, every decision we make, if we're not truly deciding it, making a shift, then nothing else, in the end, it doesn't follow through. We don't get to the place where we want to. So let's just for a minute think of that word decide. There are two parts to it. Decide. You might know some similar words to that side, like fungicide, where it kills fungus, right? Bactericide kills bacteria, right? There are lots of ways in our culture we use that word side, right? A homicide is the same thing. It's to kill away. It's what it means to kill away. And so I want you to think about deciding as killing away the other options. When I decide something, I cut away the other options to that. You're walking down a street. It goes left, it goes right. You have to decide which way you're going to go. When you decide, you eliminate the other. Oh, let's make it even more powerful. You're walking in a jungle, and the path cuts off. Once you go down a path, you're not going to be able to cut through the jungle, right? You're going to have to keep going down that path. Maybe you got something coming up behind you, right? And you got to get away from it. So there's no turning back the other way. You've got to choose one way or the other. That's deciding. There is no turning back. So this is an important part because it truly is where you stand up straight and you say, I am forgiving. I am no longer willing to be held hostage to this. I'm no longer willing to be tied to that event. I don't want to be defined by that. I want to find a new path forward. When you do that, all the steps are easier. If you never truly make the decision, as I tell you the future steps, you're going to listen to them. They're going to sound okay, but you're not going to take action on them. Because if I decide to take one of those paths, I've got to deal with whatever's on that path. I'm not turning back. Whatever it was coming up behind me is still behind me. So if I've got to swim across a creek, I got to swim across the creek. If I got to climb a mountain, I've got to climb a mountain because that's what I got to do to get forward. If I'm wishy-washy about it, nothing's going to happen. So until I make the decision on forgiving or not forgiving, nothing's going to happen. If you choose not to forgive, we know where that is. That's where we get stuck with resentment. That's where we get stuck with old patterns that keep repeating themselves. And here's the interesting thing. Many times people find that they are in a repetition of some event in their life. And what I've discovered is, for the most part, when we don't forgive, learn the lessons, and move on, we repeat it until we do. Life keeps giving us new opportunities of figuring out what was just going on. So we have to figure out, how do we step forward in this? How do we move forward in this? When we decide to forgive, we've cut off the other options. So the question for you is, what it is that's holding you back? It's an important part of this process to be very clear about some things that you can do. So as part of this training on forgiving, I want you to sit down and think about some things that have happened, some people, some events that you need to forgive. It can be you. We'll have to change the pattern a little bit to do that, but you can do it with yourself. But I also want you to pick the places where you've been hurt, where maybe an event has defined you, or a person's actions towards you have defined you. Or you think about it even a little bit smaller, maybe something your spouse did that maybe hasn't defined you, but has defined the relationship. And I want you to be very clear about that and to write it down so that you have something to move forward. Then over this next little bit, I want you to be really serious about making a decision. Are you ready for something new? Are you ready to move into something new? It's a great time to be doing that. Here we are standing, looking at a fresh vista in front of us. How do you want to move into that? Do you want to be caught by what's already back behind you? And if not, I would suggest that the way forward is to decide to forgive. So be clear about what you want to leave behind, what you want to forgive. You already know that the forgive process has nothing to do with forgetting what happened, has nothing to do with letting the person off the hook, has nothing to do with doing anything for them. This is for you to not be held hostage by that. If you're ready for that, then this process unfolds after you've made the initial decision to forgive. So your big decision this week: are you ready to forgive? And what is it, or who is it, that you need to forgive? Write that down and use that as we move forward in the next steps over the next two trainings.